Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to the 2018 Healthcare Businesswomen's Association, HBA, as we call it, podcast series. My name is Julie Kelly, and I am your host for today's program and also a volunteer leader with the HBA for many, many years. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the HBA is a global nonprofit organization comprised of individuals and organizations from across the healthcare industry committed to achieving gender parity in leadership positions, facilitating career and business connections, and providing effective practices that enable organizations to realize the full potential of the female talent. Now, our program series is titled A Mosaic of HBA Talent Advancing the Healthcare Industry. And in this series, we explore emerging job roles and trends in the workplace of this ever-changing industry. Our discussion today is titled, Put Me in Coach. I'm ready to play today. How to say that? Where we discuss the emerging trends and models for performance coaching in the workplace. There was a time when coaching was privileged service provided to executive team members. In fact, if you had a coach, you had arrived. But today, coaching is viewed as a professional development tool for all levels within an organization. And to provide insight on coaching and coaching trends, I have two HBA members and volunteer leaders joining me. Michael O'Brien, who is Chief Executive Officer of Peloton Coaching and Consulting, and Jen Fenwick, Director and Coach for Rebel Road Coaching and Consulting. Welcome, Michael and Jen.
Thanks, Julie.
Hi.
Good to be here.
Thanks.
So glad you guys could join. So let's find out a little bit about our guest before we get into the discussion. Now, Michael, you're an entrepreneur with your own coaching company, correct? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I'm now an entrepreneur, but where I found the HBA, my relationship with it, because I've been a member for quite a number of years, started way back in my pharmaceutical days. So I spent my whole career before opening Peloton Coaching and Consulting in pharma, in bio, in sales and marketing and operations. I started as a young lad, you know, in Washington, D.C. as a sales rep, and I finished up my career as a VP on the executive committee, VP of sales and marketing and operations. And one of the things that I loved doing throughout my whole career was like the most fun part of my job was developing people and developing culture. And I knew one day I would actually get into executive coaching to help leaders lead better. And so we can actually do more of the good work that all the members of the HBA do.
Great. Now, had you had a coach yourself during those years in farm?
Yeah, so actually and we've talked offline, Julie, around my last bad day, which was my, you know, cycling accident that I write about. So just prior to that, about 6 months prior to that, I hired our very first executive coach. I never really even knew that there was an executive coaching profession. And he made such an impact on me. I actually mentioned his name when I was recovering in the ICU, and I knew that seed was planted then, and I would follow in his footsteps. And now I just try to honor his work. So he had a profound impact on my whole career, and not only my career, but really my life.
Wow, that's impressive. And with the HBA, I know you've been a long-term supporter of the HBA. I think your company became a corporate partner, and then recently you made a decision to join the board. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so one of the things I was doing in my corporate days, I was a member, but I wasn't putting in any sweat equity, to be quite honest. I would show up at WODI, but I'd carry out the mission at work. I believe my best teams, heck, I know, my best teams were diverse, right? And I've been fortunate to be with a whole bunch of awesome female leaders that made success happen in my company. So at work, I put in the sweat equity to fulfill the mission, but I didn't necessarily volunteer or do any of that. And again, I would show up at WODI. So when I decided to leave corporate pharma and start my own coaching firm to help pharma and bio and healthcare leaders, I decided I was going to put some sweat equity in. I would start volunteering. I became a mentor in the New York, New Jersey mentor-mentee program. This is now my fourth year. And I just started participating as much as I could, and just to really try to further the mission, because I think guys need to be part of this conversation. And when Christy Arrow called me up and said, hey, we have an opening on the New York board. I was like, sign me up. You know, she didn't really have to sell me all that hard. And I was like, I would love to. And when I went to the last meeting in Philadelphia, the leadership annual conference, I was so inspired by the content, I decided to level up my company's participation, and that's why we became a corporate sponsor.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much for everything you've given to the HBA and your joining the board, and they got you, they rigged you in, you're going to have a great time. Soon you're going to be leading
these podcast platforms
and taking over for me, Michael. So, well, you know, thank you very much.
First things first, Julie. First things first.
Yes, come on. I'm looking for my successor here, but thank you for that overview. And how lucky we also have Jen with us on this call. Jen's a recent HBA member and volunteer in the European chapter. She, too, is an entrepreneur who brings a different background to coaching and our discussion today. So, Jen, please share a bit about yourself and how you got into coaching.
Hi, I'm really excited to be here, dialing in from Edinburgh, Scotland today. So I'm a director and career coach at Rebel Road Coaching. And actually, yeah, my call to coaching first came from the netball court in New Zealand. So netball's a little bit like basketball without the running, if you can picture that. And if you think about the sporting world, you know, you would never imagine not to have a coach. You know, so coach is key for sports people to reach and realize their goals and overcome hurdles, sometimes quite literally. And I think, you know, organizations and individuals are now coming around to the same conclusion. So I was a netball coach many years ago. And so I took that early interest in how as a coach I can help people reach their potential. And I studied HR and organizational psychology at uni. So again, it's around that mindset piece, and you know, how do we help people get in the right headspace so that they can reach their goals, and how can we help them get out of their own way? So that was really, really useful, actually, for me when I joined the pharmaceutical industry about 15 years ago, goodness, and actually using a lot of that experience, that early coaching knowledge and experience to work with organizations on how to identify the top talent and how to identify the best people to bring into organizations, and then how do we retain them and develop them. So that kind of early coaching experience and knowledge has kind of helped me throughout my career. And actually, working as a global talent director at IQVIA, where I was managing a global team. So would you like me to kind of talk a little bit around my pharma career then?
I think with pharma, that kind of gave you the whole initiative to really start your own business. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I spent 15 years in pharma working. Yeah, lastly, as I said, as a global talent director. So I supported over 1,000 people take brave steps in their careers with working within organizations. You know, from junior level through to executive. In fact, we can all benefit from coaching when we get out of comfort zones. So I'd always really loved, you know, that how I can help support people kind of take control of their careers and go after what they want. And that kind of, you know, spurred my interest as far as, you know, how can I do this for a wider range of people? You know, I was doing it within organizations, but actually, you know, how can I then take that to a wider group of people? Because, you know, the thing about careers is that, you know, a lot of people don't realize where to start with driving forward their careers, and actually how much power they have as an individual to drive forward their careers. So actually, you know, when I launched my coaching business last year, it was really looking at how can I work with people to help them get clear on what they want to do with their careers, how they can kind of take charge of that and go after the things they want across work and life, and really not wait for one day.
Yes, absolutely. And that really spurred you to join the HBA to continue to network, grow your professional connections, and really stay engaged. We have a lot of HBA entrepreneurs looking just for ways to connect with other entrepreneurs, and the HBA
Definitely.
Has been a tool that you've been using for that. Great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what a talented duo we have for this discussion. Jen, I really love how you bridged your athletic coaching skills to the farm industry and to your business. I know that I have my high school track coach, Jack Fury, to thank not only for my athletic performance, but also for my professional success. He helped me visualize, achieve my potential, and as you said, get out of my own head and out of my own way.
Love that.
So let's start. Yeah, Jen, how has the attitude towards coaching changed in the workplace?
Yes, I'm definitely seeing it evolve. You know, I think both for organizations and individuals are kind of starting to really see the range of benefits that coaching offers. And it's not limited to, you know, to execs or those that are maybe, you know, struggling in certain areas. I think we're starting to see the wider benefits on, you know, how it can support, you know, all of us. And I think actually for me, you know, from my perspective, I think, you know, across work and life, you know, I think we're busier than ever these days. You know, we're overconnected, you know, yet disconnected, you know, and actually don't have as much time to focus on ourselves or even think about what we want to do around careers. So I think that actually, you know, coaching, we're starting to see that coaching is that protected space away from the busyness of work and life, so that, you know, it gives people or employees that much needed thinking time away from it all, to focus on goals, to look at areas of growth, to overcome blocks, and just keep themselves a priority.
Right. So slowing down and taking time to really reflect, right? Because it's so nuts out there.
Definitely.
The protected space is that time just for you and for you to focus on.
Definitely.
On, right. And, you know, what do you have two areas of focus for your coaching. Do you want to share that with the membership?
Yeah, definitely. So I think, you know, I think when I started my business, I saw there was a couple of things that kind of helped me focus where I wanted to support people. And first of all was seeing that such a huge number of people are disengaged with work. You know, I think they say 65% of people these days are not happy in their jobs, and it just shouldn't be that way. And the other thing I was seeing working in organizations was, you know, a really growing rate of people burning out, you know, and many of them high achieving women. You know, so I see coaching as a solution to kind of combat those two things. And actually I say it's a strategic tool because I think, you know, it can positively impact, you know, engagement, retention, and it can accelerate growth and learning. It's kind of rocket fuel for careers, but can also support well-being as well. So all of that good stuff. But I think, you know, the two areas I kind of specialize in now is, you know, the career piece. So, you know, so that rocket fuel for careers and supporting women navigate career transitions confidently, and that strategic headspace, you know, for busy leaders, you know, who want to get back in the driving seat with work and life and have that maximum impact without the burnout.
Right, right. And, you know, you read a lot about female CEO burnout. We don't have that many of them.
Yeah.
So we really have to make sure the ones we have don't burn out. But thank you for that purview into your work. And Michael, you know, as an industry veteran and recipient of coaching services, and what techniques are you using to help your clients and companies achieve their optimal performance?
Well, first, Joy and Jen, I have to, like, give an amen to, like, we need more female CEOs. So we just need more females in senior executive roles to change our culture. That's the first step. But one of the things I really work on with my leaders is the conversations that they're having. I believe that conversations drive everything, right? When you think about the work that we do, the conversations that we have build our relationships. Those relationships build our culture, our tribe, our network, whatever you want to label it as. And I think the most important conversation that we have is the one that we have with ourselves. So I really try to work with them on with, just as Jen said, the right mindset to have the right conversation with themselves, you know, slay all those negative emotions like the worry and the doubt and the fear that hold us back, but then really talking about the neuroscience of conversation, like what's happening with each other when we're all in those cross-functional matrix that we all work in. When conversations hit the mark, right, we get a nice rush of oxytocin and serotonin, and you know, and we build our culture. But if those conversations miss the mark, and unfortunately many of them do, we actually get more of the cortisol, adrenaline, stress hormone rush, and that holds us back. And that's over time, like that, the constant state of feeling like a hamster on his or her hamster wheel, right? That like always doing, right, being a great human doer, it takes away from the type of conversation we could potentially have with ourselves, but certainly the conversation that we're going to have with others. So we work on some of the finer points, sort of the building blocks, around the power of listening, right, actively listening to connect and to understand, as opposed to what happens a lot in corporate meetings, we just listen to reply, right? We wait for the other person to stop talking long enough so we can get our point across to win the meeting or win the argument, and we lose sight of our bigger goal, the bigger purpose why we're in this industry. And, you know, we try to, you know, work with some executives on trying to mute their addiction to being right. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk in terms of addiction, in, at least in this country. And I think one of the more powerful addictions we have is this addiction to being right, which is all sort of ego-based. And so I really try to work with them first on how to have a better conversation with themselves, but also better conversations at work to build their culture so they can get more stuff done. And then we work on some of the other finer points that Jen mentioned. I think what Jen mentioned in terms of her work is spot on in terms of executives' busyness and just the demands of the current leader in 2018. The world's gotten faster and the problems are more complex.
They are. That's really interesting, Michael. And, you know, in conversations with myself, I'm always right. But, you know, you can't get ahead by having conversations just with yourself. But, but I agree with you. I've been in many meetings where everyone's at the table and everyone is waiting to say something so they say they've participated. And I leave some of those meetings and I go, okay, did we really accomplish anything? Or has everyone checked the box they participated in the meeting and contributed or agreed with somebody? But the conversations, because of the demand, I find having live conversations are the exception and not the rule. I don't know about you. I am texted and emailed out. I like to pick up the phone and knock something out in a minute, but you have to, again, be efficient the way you do that. Your model really resonates with me about effective conversations. Can you give me an example of how you used your model to drive positive results, Michael?
Yeah, so there's a couple different examples. Actually, members of the HBA that are my clients, where, you know, for actually both these leaders, they were definitely much more directive in their approach. And so what I try to work with my leaders on is developing that conversational agility. You think about, like, your toolbox, right? There's a saw, there's a screwdriver, and there's a hammer. Well, a lot of leaders sort of grow up believing, well, they use the hammer all the time, being really directive. It's that old command and control, right? So they have the right answer. And the thing is, many of our leaders today at high levels have been more right than wrong, right? They've had the right answer, and that's one of the reasons why they've been able to get promoted. But now they find themselves in maybe a senior director level role or a VP role, and they're further away from the customer, and they may not necessarily have the right answer. They need to actually ask better questions. They have to move from a directional conversation or a control conversation into more of collaboration or co-creation. So in both these cases, we really worked on building up more conversational agility to have more co-creation type of conversations with their team and their executive colleagues and just overall within the company. They still were able to pick out their hammer, right? Because sometimes when there's an emergency, the hammer is the best tool, right? Like, you know, we know how to use it. But a good agile conversationalist will know when to pick up the hammer, when to pick up the screwdriver, and when to pick up the saw. And I'm actually really happy to report, actually, I had a phone call with one of them last week, and she's going to be elevated in her company into a high-level job. It's not public yet, so I'm not going to give the title. I don't want to necessarily share that. But for both of them, they've advanced their career throughout our coaching engagement. And the one thing they changed was that conversation with themselves. They slayed the gremlin or inner critic, right? Or at least they knew how to tame it. And they started building in more conversational agility into their leadership style. And they started, you know, basically showing up, valuing the we in the relationship over the me, which unfortunately a lot of leaders still value me first. And again, that's sort of all based on ego, unfortunately.
Wow, really interesting. Thank you for those examples. And this whole thing I mentioned about getting out of your head, and you know, I have that conversation with myself before I go in, all that self-doubt, what if, but it's real. And, you know, you can psych yourself out about anything. And the thing with using the hammer, we all know that, you know, the whole conversation and more of a discovery than, you know, a follow through with what I say. I love that idea of really conversation agility. This has gone so fast, you guys. It's been a really great conversation today. I'm going to ask for some final comments on, you know, if you were to get a coach, Jen, what's important in selecting a coach?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, you know, if you're starting out trying to find a coach, ask around, you know. So before you kind of start, you know, ask around, ask your friends, ask your colleagues, you know, who's good. I always love a good referral. And then, you know, the key for me is trust, and, you know, choosing a coach that you really connect with on a personal level and can engage with as a partner for you reaching your goals. Because I think, you know, the greatest growth and transformation, you know, often comes from unlocking some of that stuff you've been carrying around. So making sure that you have someone that you trust and you're engaged with is key. So make sure you have that relationship. Looking at their backgrounds, you know, what their experiences in coaching, but even beyond coaching, what their backgrounds are. And actually, you know, whether they've, you know, trained through through a body like I trained through the International Coaching Federation and one of their associates. So that's also a good indication of where they've trained. And then also, you know, I think to get a really good idea of your coach's style and to make sure there's a match. And testimonials and client feedback is a great way of you seeing people who've kind of gone through that coaching journey, survived and come out the other end. But just really for you then to explore, you know, what clients are saying and what outcomes they've achieved. And I think that's a really good starting place on finding that right coach for you.
Great comments. Hey, Michael, what do you have to add to that?
Well, I think, yeah, Jen made some awesome comments. I'm going to echo a couple of them. One, the relationship is a two-way street of trust. So, you know, as you check out coaches, the coach is also checking you out, right? They're wanting to see, like, hey, can we form a good partnership? Is the potential client eager to get better? I totally agree with Jen. Like, finding a coach who has an ICF accreditation, what that is sort of the good housekeeping seal of approval, because you know your coach has been through the rigor and the training to be in service for you. So I would also say, like, talking to a few coaches and really trying to understand philosophy and approach and getting comfortable, right? Coaching works when we can go deep with each other and holistic. And so doing those steps, I think, ever so important. But to Jen's point about referrals, I think it's great to do that, to get some other coaches, so get the coaches to talk to. But I also love it too, right? So if I get a referral from one of my clients for another leader who wants coaching, I sort of know, like, in that network, they're eager to get better, because I love working with people who want to put in the work, because coaches don't necessarily have magic beans or a magic wand, right? So it's a partnership. But I know Jen and I go all in with our clients.
Yeah.
But we need the client to go all in with us too.
Absolutely. Wow.
I love that comment.
Great tips. Love that comment. And, you know, it is a two-way partnership built on trust. So I want to thank you both for joining our podcast program today and for sharing your insights on coaching and coaching trends. And, you know, I admire you both. You both used a medical emergency to really turn around your lives and pursue your entrepreneurial passion in coaching. So, you know, I admire you both for that. We look forward to our next podcast where we explore how millennials are driving gender parity in the workplace. We got some young upcoming professionals that are going to really stimulate some provocative conversations. So thanks again, Jen and Michael, for joining the program. And this is Julie Kelly signing off for the HBA.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.